Good afternoon and welcome to Open Air, KLW's weekly radio magazine of the performing arts. I'm your host, David LaTulipe. This week I'll be talking with comedian and festival co-producer Abe Nakarni about the 5th annual Vezi Comedy Fest, which takes place through August 19th at comedy clubs and theaters in 9 Northern California cities. The festival is the largest of its kind in the United States and features more than 30 South Asian comedians from all over the U.S. with diverse ethnic and religious backgrounds. Playwright Anne Galjour talks about the world premiere of Hashtag Get Gandhi, a seriously radical feminist comedy presented by the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pantsuits Theater Collective, inspired by the writings of radical feminist philosopher and theologian Mary Daly. And it focuses on Mahatma Gandhi's infamous experiments in celibacy and his increasingly bizarre sexual philosophy, and how a group of San Franciscans reacts to that uncovered history. We'll also talk with co-artistic director Joanne Winter from the performing arts company Word for Word, celebrating its 25th anniversary. Also joining me will be director Joel Mullenix, who directs one of those works. In the conversation, we'll have that shortly. We'll also meet with actress Ash Molloy, who's getting her MFA in acting from ACT and is doing a production of My Name is Rachel Corey, a solo play that she's been touring around the country, which chronicles the life of American peace activist Rachel Corey from when she was young until her days before her death in Gaza. Stay with us. Word for Word celebrates its 25th season with a rare production of Anniversary, stories by Tobias Wolff and George Saunders, which features Wolff's Deep Kiss and Saunders' Victory Lap, works by two of the company's favorite authors, directed by Joel Mullenix and Delia McDougall. These stories will run through September 2nd at Z Space's main stage here in San Francisco. And joining me to talk about the whole shebang is Joanne Winter, who is co-founder of Word for Word. She's been a theater artist in the Bay Area for over 30 years. Before founding Word for Word with Susan Harlow in 1993, she was a freelance actor working at many local theaters. And with Word for Word, in addition to acting and directing, she oversees the Youth Arts Program, which takes the Word for Word process into schools all over Northern California. Joanne, welcome back to Open Air. Great to see you again.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here.
Of course. And the director of Deep Kiss joins me, Joel Mullenix, who's directed a number of Word for Word's most successful productions, including Olive Kitteridge by Elizabeth Strout, More Stories by Tobias Wolff, Stories by Alice Munro, and Which is More Than I Can Say About Some People by Laurie Moore. Additionally, he has directed Acid Test by Lynn Kaufman, the long-running one-man show starring Warren David Keith, and Family Alchemy, featuring the works of Bernard Malamud and Grace Paley for a traveling Jewish theater. Joel, welcome to our airwaves as well.
Thank you. Good to be here. Thank you.
Well, let's see. Who wants to take this first? Tobias Wolff has had a long history with Word for Word. Tell us a little bit about how Tobias got involved originally. Joanne?
Well, we're just great lovers of his work. He is one of the masters of the short story form, and his works in particular work really well with our form, which is to put short stories on stage without changing a word of the text, but fully inhabiting them as a performance, as a play. The characters are telling the story as it's happening to them. So we're not narrating the story. We don't have one person narrating while everybody else acts it out. It's like all the characters are bringing the story to life on stage. And Toby's work just really fits hand in glove with what we do. He also, luckily for us, is local. He lives in Stanford. He taught at Stanford for many years and headed up the creative writing program there. And so we got to actually form a relationship with him. And he's a wonderful, wonderful man as well, and has come to see all of his works that we've done, and is always just so very generous in, giving us his work and supporting us in many, many ways. And Joel, you've directed almost all of his stories that we've done, right?
Well, I've directed three of them. This will be the fourth one I've directed.
Oh, that's right.
But
right.
I acted in three of them too in the first.
Fantastic.
First series of them. Yeah.
And
right.
So a good fit, in other words, for word for word.
Yes.
We should also mention that Toby Wolf received the National Medal of Arts from President Barack Obama in 2015.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so, how do you choose what of his works to present in this 25th anniversary season?
We spent a lot of time thinking about what we're going to do to celebrate our 25th, and Mr. Wolf's name and work came to the forefront for everybody because of the reasons I've just stated. But in general, to choose a story, we look for really evocative language that can be activated. Interesting characters and also themes that are relevant or that we think our audiences and that we are compelled by. Mm-hmm. These stories, both Toby's story Deep Kiss and George Saunders' story Victory Lap, center around young people who are faced with really important decisions that affect the rest of their lives, and also about how you treat other people in your life, what's the right thing to do, and how making those kinds of decisions affect you forever.
So contrasting themes of adolescence, mm-hmm. and youthful longing, or mm-hmm. kind of comparable stories.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Joel, tell us more about Deep Kiss.
Deep Kiss is a story of a man who falls in love with a girl when he's a teenager. And the relationship really just consists of a deep infatuation that is surrounded by the physicality of the kiss. They they're only together 3 months, but he carries her with him his whole life. Like, he never forgets her, and his life goes on. He lives a completely normal, outwardly happy, successful life, but secretly he kind of longs for this girl that he knew. And the story begins with him learning that she's died, and it sort of winds back to seeing what happened with them and then how it ended up, how the relationship ended up being severed and so forth.
Mm, the Times refers to Deep Kiss as a standout, the painful genius of Tobias Wolff's storytelling. Mm.
Yeah, I was thinking every time I read one of Toby's stories, I think right away I'm kind of captivated. And then I'm amused. I'm really laughing, and then I start choking up. And then at the end, I just say, "Wow, what just happened to me?"
So maybe you'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll come out of anniversary with something for everyone. And so there's a very close connection between George Saunders and Toby Wolf. George studied with Toby.
That's right. Yeah, at Syracuse, George was in the graduate writing program, and in fact now holds the seat at Syracuse that Toby did when he was there. George is now teaching there, and George met his wife in the writing program there. It's a wonderful connection, wonderful story. And we have been wanting to do George's work for a really long time. When his collection came out the 10th of December a few years ago, and the New York Times said, "This is the best book you'll ever read," or this year, or something like that. And we agreed, and we tried really hard to get permission from his agent to do the work, and got a resounding no immediately.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. In spite of the connection, okay.
Well, we didn't know about that connection at that time, and he didn't know, And the agent doesn't care about the connection. But we were asked last year by the JCC to appear at George's first appearance for his book tour for his first novel, Lincoln in the Bardo, which is an extraordinary work. And when we were asked, I didn't even know what the book was. It hadn't even been published yet. And I said, absolutely, I don't care what it is, we'll do it because we love his work so much. And so we got to do an excerpt from that book with him as part of the reading. He he acted in the reading as well. And when I met him, I said, you know, we've been wanting to do your work forever. And he actually, coincidentally, had seen us do a piece of Toby's at a celebration of Toby's a few years before. And he said to me in that moment, absolutely, you can do whatever you want. You guys are wonderful. So you can imagine, I fell on the floor and fainted. I was so happy. And so that is how this came to be. And we would love to do any and all of George's stories as well. He's an amazing writer.
Talk to us a little bit more about some of those hurdles that are presented to you. You say you want to present something on Word for Word, but you mentioned that there are agents, there are publishers that are involved.
Yeah.
What sort of obstacles have been thrown your way that have been either fortunate or unfortunate and something that you'd like to bring to Word for Word?
Well, we always want to get permission.
You know,
yeah, we always want to get permission either from the writer or from their agent or publisher. You know, if we can go right to the source, that's always the best. But and we've been really extraordinarily fortunate. For most of the writers, you know, say yes immediately, if not very shortly after we ask, and a lot of them give us permission for, you know, very little compensation. And we've been really lucky that way. And when we did all of Kitteridge, for instance, we didn't know at the time when we asked permission that Elizabeth Strout was negotiating with HBO and Frances McDormand, who are in the process of preparing to do the wonderful HBO miniseries from the book. And so Elizabeth Strout was very kind to sort of grandfather us into that agreement. And they said, yeah, you can do your thing, but you can only do that one run in San Francisco. And normally we're very lucky, we get to tour every year to France. They said, absolutely no way can you tour this piece, you know, because obviously we are such a big competition to HBO. as you know, our several thousand loyal audience is, you know, it's going to make a big dent in there. So, but luckily we were able to work that out, and that was one of our most successful runs, and Joel, you know, directed that as well. We also did an amazing collaboration with California Shakespeare Theater of John Steinbeck's The Pastors of Heaven, which is a novel of 12 linked short stories. And at the same time that we were about to go into production with that, his family was in the courts sort of fighting with each other about who owned the rights to his writing. And we became for a short time involved in that argument. But luckily it all worked out in the end, and we were able to present that. That was an amazing collaboration with Octavio Solis, who actually is a playwright who took the stories and created a script as something that we don't normally do. But as it was a co-production with California Shakespeare Theater, that's something that we wanted to look at. So, you know, but mostly we've been really lucky to be able to get rights most of the time.
Great. Well,
yeah.
That's Joanne Winter, co-founder of Word for Word. They're appropriately titled Anniversary, celebrating the 25th anniversary of Word for Word. Runs through the, what is it, the, I missed the date here, through September 2nd at Word for Word at Z Space. Also talking with Joel Mullinex, longtime director of Word for Word Productions. And about Deep Kiss, Joel, tell us a little bit about the cast that you have for Deep Kiss.
It's a great cast. A couple of people that have done a number of things with Word for Word, Paul Finocchiaro and Molly Benson. And the rest of the cast are people that I don't believe I've worked with before, but they're just great.
And we also, my co-artistic director, Susan, is in the show
as
well. Yeah.
Of course. Sue has done a lot of Word for Word.
Shout out to Sue. Thank you, Sue.
Yes.
Nice talking with you sometime.
And let's see. It's Alex Pinullo, Adam Elder, Blythe Foster, Isabel Langan.
And Mohammed Shahata.
Mohammed Shahata.
Indeed. Yeah. And so we should point out that this isn't just, you know, people on a stage reading the words. There's actually sets, there's designs, there's a lighting.
Fully produced.
Yeah, people playing multiple characters most of the time. A lot of, with a short story, you're shifting time and space, time and place a lot. Mm-hmm. And So we often have people playing, I think Molly's playing about 21 characters or something like that.
Including a baby
including
deer.
Including a deer, yeah.
Well, you'll want to catch the 25th anniversary of Word for Word at ZSpace. More information at zspace.org. Stories by Tobias Wolf and George Saunders. My thanks to Joanne Winter and Joel Mullenix for telling us a little bit about it.
Thank you, David.
So much for having us.
Always a pleasure.
Pleasure. More information, once again, is at zspace.org. Still to come, a talk with Ash Molloy, who's doing a one-person show that she's been doing around the country, chronicling the life of American peace activist Rachel Corrie. And about the 5th annual Vasey Comedy Fest, 30 comedians from around the country in 9 different cities here in Northern California. You'll hear about that shortly. Well, next, the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pantsuits Theater Collective presents Hashtag Get Gandhi, a seriously radical feminist comedy by Anne Gulgeour. It's a world premiere directed by Nancy Carlin, featuring Jerry Lynn Cohen, Patty Silver, Howard Swain, Miranda Swain, and Lindsay Cowell, and for a limited engagement, 13 performances only through the 26th of this month. Also at the venue to be this month, Z Below, on Florida Street here in San Francisco. It's inspired by the writings of radical feminist philosopher and theologian Mary Daly. This multi-character play focuses on Mahatma Gandhi's infamous experiments in brahmacharya, or celibacy. Apparently, Gandhi would have a young woman disrobe and sleep with him, completely naked, as a test to prove his seminal continence and his purity of spirit. Gandhi never saw anything wrong with this practice, but here's where history meets dramaturgy. In the pen of Anne Gulgeour, it seems that a small group of old-school, bra-burning San Francisco feminists do have a problem with that. And civil disobedience and a touch of radicalism ensue. Here to talk about the work is playwright Anne Gulgeour, who is also an actor, producer, and playwriting teacher whose works have been produced by Berkeley Rep, Seattle Rep, Actors Rep of Louisville, Manhattan Theater Club, among many others, and in festivals around the country. Her recent collaborations with Robert Moses' Kin Dance Company's Fable and Faith and The Cinderella Principle were both premiered at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts here in San Francisco and received subsequent tours. She currently teaches in the Creative Writing Department at SF State University. Welcome to you, Anne.
Thank you for having me here, David.
Of course. And we're joined also by Jerry Lynn Cohen, who has been performing throughout the Bay Area for some 30 years. She's a charter member of San Francisco's Word for Word Performing Arts Company, coincidentally, where she has originated roles in over 16 of their critically acclaimed productions. She's also appeared at ACT, Aurora Theater, Berkeley Rep, Crowded Fire, you name it, here in the Bay Area, she's probably been there. And she's also toured nationally and internationally with Word for Word and the SF Mime Troupe. Welcome to you, Jerry.
Thank you so much, David.
Of course. Well, let's talk about how this became a play. Now, this is a kind of a timely revisiting of a historical figure, but tell me about how the concept of this happened, Anne Gulgeour.
Well, for some time, I was looking for a way to collaborate with two artists who I respect deeply, Jerry Lynn Cohen and Patty Silver, and we'd been looking for a way to work together, so we would get together and eat and discuss. And we were looking for germinal ideas, for work that would deal with women's issues. And we came upon Mary Daly's seminal work, Pure Lust, where we learned about Mahatma Gandhi's controversial celibacy practice of having young girls sleep with him naked to test his purity of spirit. And he never saw anything
wrong. It would work for me, but that's the
Got it. So this is back in 2014, and you know, he never saw anything wrong with it. You know, to just to have control over, you know, physical passion, and but there was no thought about the girl lying beside him, and so we thought this was incredibly provocative. Now, around this time, it was around midterm elections, and remember that that candidate who said that a woman who was impregnated during rape, her body would naturally expel the fetus.
Of course.
Because if it's real rape. And so, wow, we thought that was provocative, to say the least. And the events.
Oh, those were the days.
Oh, I'm telling you. Right. And so we just kept getting together, writing, eating, and reading these scenes. I'd write these scenes, and Jerry Lynn and Patty would, you know, we'd read the scenes, share them. In 2016, we brought Nancy Carlin, this incredible director, on board. And then we have the 2016 election. This thing has legs more than ever. And then the Me Too movement, and Time's Up. And here we are. Mm. Here we are. We've been writing a play and creating theater together that is dealing with two major conversations in America: questions of sexual assault, sexual abuse, sexual power, and questions around hero worship, of which we believe that our comedic romp contributes to these national conversations in the way of dialogue and debate.
Before we get to the comedic aspect of the show, and the involvement of San Francisco radical feminists, so to speak, let's talk a little bit about how the history books have washed over this aspect of Gandhi's history just to kind of preserve his image. And when did some more of these practices, increasingly bizarre practices as he got older, come out more to the public?
Well, I learned about these practices through Mary Daly, and through Mary Daly's book. I learned about Ved Mehta's book, Gandhi and His Followers, which was really extraordinary research. What I learned through reading Ved Mehta's book was that his followers, some of his followers at the time, okay, left him. When they found out about these practices, it was very upsetting. And there were also orthodox practitioners of Brahmacharya. You're not supposed to touch anyone. And they heavily criticized him. So the practice was known. People knew that he was doing this. So we have letters from, you know, some of his followers who fell away from him because of this. But it wasn't just that. One of his first successful projects in South Africa, in Durban, was to create a separate entrance in the post office, one entrance for Indians and whites, and another entrance for indigenous black people there. His writings around Africans are really disturbing. They are racist. They actually, a couple of years ago, took down his statue in Ghana. And he also said something very controversial. He said in World War II that the Jews in Germany should be willing to go to the ovens if that's what nonviolence calls for.
Wow.
So all of this stuff is out there. Arundhati Roy has been pushing to get his names, you know, like take his names off the street signs, you know, that kind of thing in India. So it's questionable. I want to say personally he was an extraordinary figure. He did a lot of good, but, you know, I'm Cajun. In my culture, we'd say, oh, yeah, he did a lot of good, but he did some bad. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That's how we would say it in my culture. But just like all of us, he was a person. Mm. He was like all of us, okay? But it's, yeah, it's good. Boy, is this the stuff of theater?
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just the stuff of theater. I mean, we had great meals creating theater.
You both
this.
Are holding your figures wonderfully after all of these meals.
Well, Jerry Lynn's a foodie. My God, can she cook? You know, so, right. It's been quite an experience.
It has.
Let's talk about a statue being removed in Ghana. Let's talk about the history of the statue here in San Francisco of Gandhi and how that works into the play.
Okay. I just have to say, I remember you looking on your cell phone when you found the article. We were sitting at Patty Silver's dining room table,
mm-hmm.
eating, reading scenes, and you said, oh, you found this article online. Tell them about the article.
Well, it was an article where
Jerry Lynn Cohen. Go ahead.
Hi. I hope I remember it as well as you. It was an article that basically said there was a group that was meeting to protest the statue, the existence of the statue down at the Ferry Building. And it was it the Minorities of India organization? Yeah.
Because of Gandhi's, to publicize Gandhi's oppression of Christians, Jews, Buddhists, Sikhs, Dalits, and other Indian minorities. And right there, we said, oh, this little coven of these bra-burning feminists are angry that they want to beat that organization to the punch because they didn't include women on the list.
Mm, interesting. Okay. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah,
so that's, you know, from
the
feminist perspective. But, you know, David, that's a little complicated, too, because in real life, Gandhi also brought women out into the streets to protest against the British, right?
Mm.
To help get the British out of India. Right. So like I said, he did some good, but he did some bad.
We should mention that this statue of Gandhi here in San Francisco is near the Ferry Building on the Embarcadero. And in addition to in your play, it has been subject to to acts of vandalism and protest as well. And it has kind of a sketchy history anyway for the foundation that founded and advocated for its construction and installation. And in terms of vandalism, the eyeglasses are most stolen 5 different times, and the staff has been broken on several occasions. We are not advocating violence here at KLW. Peaceful protest is what
we're on. Nor are the Sisters of the Traveling Pantsuits Theater Collective.
So they do. They want to do more damage than stealing the eyeglasses, I understand.
But that's the fictive world. It's a world of fiction. Certainly not in real life. We don't advocate that.
So Jerry Lynn, tell us a little bit more about the character of Helen.
Well, Helen is somebody very close to my heart. I think that Anne has written about a world that is very familiar to everyone that I know living in San Francisco, not directly connected to the world of technology. you know, a struggling artist who, living in a rent-controlled apartment, piecing together a life around dance and yoga and music and culture, you know, part of a dwindling San Francisco population. And she has a beautiful daughter that she loves very much that has firmly rejected everything that her mother stands for and has moved out to Walnut Creek and is living a very stable, suburban, rather conservative life. So there's a wonderful juxtaposition of
of politics and values that are constantly being challenged from both perspectives. And Helen is just trying to keep it together and maintain her creative integrity, mm-hmm. which becomes harder and harder.
Sure. We should also mention the character of Bob, played by Howard Swain, whose bubble is burst, so to speak, in learning more about his idol of nonviolence.
That is true. And that's the nice thing for us as a collective is that Nancy Carlin is married to Howard Swain, and their daughter, Miranda Swain, is playing Maya, the youngest of this
She's making
coven.
Her professional debut in this play.
Wow. Yes. So it is kind of an all-in-the-family thing, and we should give a tremendous shout-out to the theater royalty of having director Joy Carlin involved.
I know.
How do you know Joy?
Who doesn't know Joy? I mean, my gosh, Joy, just one of my heroes in Bay Area theater for a lot of us.
Yeah.
And so that's how I know Joy. And she came to one of our rehearsals.
She did.
And she gave me only one note. So I felt thrilled. I just felt thrilled and humbled. So, yeah.
Joy has been directing in the Bay Area for some 30 or more years. She's been all over. Nancy Carlin has been a dialect coach, acting teacher, former member of ACT, associate artist with the California Shakespeare, all of the local companies that you can imagine she's been involved in, as well as teaching at UC Berkeley, UCSC, San Jose State. We could go on forever about Nancy. Congratulations about having her involved.
Mm. Yes, we're very lucky.
And we should mention that hashtag Get Gandhi, a seriously radical feminist comedy by Anne Galjour, is having its world premiere. 13 performances only at the Z Below space here in San Francisco on Florida Street. We thank you for coming in, Jerry Lynn Cohen. We have a spectacular run.
Thank you so much.
And Galjour, look forward to hearing more about your works.
Thank you so much,
You'll
David.
Learn a lot more about Gandhi than you ever thought you could imagine by coming to catch this. It's at limited engagement at Z Below, zspace.org for more information. Thanks for coming in.
3, 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 1.
Music could very well serve as the theme music for our final segment of the show coming up in just a few minutes about the 5th annual Vaizhi South Asian Comedian Comedy Festival here in San Francisco. But next to my guest is Ashley Malloy, who is an actor, playwright, and teaching artist from my hometown nearby in Connecticut, Windsor, Connecticut. Since 2013, she's toured the one-person show My Name is Rachel Corey from coast to coast, working to ignite a spirit of activism in audiences who might otherwise remain ignorant on Israel's occupation of Palestine and the blockade of Gaza. Ash is in her third year at ACT's MFA acting program in San Francisco, and she joins me now in studio. Hi, Ash.
Hi, thank you so much.
Well, we have a fairly savvy public radio audience here in the mm-hmm. Bay Area, but for those who need a little history refresher, who exactly was Rachel Corey?
So Rachel Corey, when she went to Gaza in 2003, she's a 23-year-old peace activist from Olympia, Washington. And in the play, you really see her evolution as an adolescent with a penchant for Pat Benatar and the magnetic fields and dealing with things like that any adolescent would go through. And you really get to witness her evolution as an activist. So she was just a young woman trying to find her place in the world and understand the responsibility that she had to fulfill with the privilege that she was afforded as an American.
What exactly did you read or hear about that latched you onto this woman so much?
Well, what really sparked something in me was actually meeting Palestinian actors. So before I even knew who Rachel Corrie was, I was actually I went to Central Connecticut State University, and they had some actors from the West Bank in the Jenin refugee camp from the Freedom Theater come over to Connecticut. And meeting them and hearing about their experiences living under occupation was really eye-opening for me. And I just kept asking myself what I could do to raise more awareness about what was going on, because it was really a huge awakening for me. So with the skills I had and the degree I was getting at the time, a BFA in acting, I just said, I got to do something. And I found this play, and I've been doing it on and off since September 2013.
Fantastic. I found it interesting that a lot of these performances have been sponsored by chapters of Jewish Voices for Peace.
Mm-hmm. Yes, they've been really great advocates of my work. I think a lot of times, I even still catch myself being like, how do I broach the subject of the show with my Jewish friend or this person who I know is Jewish? Like, maybe it will lead to a difficult conversation, but I think, you know, it's that kind of knee-jerk reaction when I try to reverse direction and say, okay, you're operating from a place of assumption and bias, and that doesn't really move the conversation forward at all. So, yeah, I've just tried to seek out those communities that really believe in freedom for Palestine, and it's a lot more people than you would assume.
The material is drawn from Rachel's emails and journals as published in The Guardian by the late Alan Rickman. Did you have further access to some of those source materials?
Did I? Yes. So Rachel also, a lot of her writing is published in a book called Let Me Stand Alone. And that is a beautiful collection of her writing from the time she was about maybe 10 to right up until her last email she sent while in Gaza. And it's just an incredible, you really just get to see her evolution as a young woman trying to move into that political consciousness responsibly. So that's kind of been my Bible as an actor. I go back to that book every time I do the play. I've read it cover to cover maybe four times, just saying like, okay, what else can I find? What was happening in this time of her life that the play doesn't cover? And how can I just bring that as kind of an underbelly to whatever I'm doing as an actor?
And the name of that book again was?
Let Me Stand Alone.
Let Me Stand Alone, Rachel Corrie. So you've taken this around the country. What has been the most surprising reaction from an audience member or an audience in general, and where?
Yeah. Oh, there's lots of them. Okay.
Please.
So one of them, I was doing a show in Florida, and I remember feeling like a little, I was feeling celebratory because it was my 50th show.
Wow.
And I was in Southern Florida, and the audience was just horrendous. I mean, they were like coming in and out. It was college kids, and they were coming in and out and eating snacks and like slamming doors, and janitors were like walking by with trash. It was a mess. And I felt very disrespected. And at the end of the show, I was like, I normally would do a talk back here, and I'm not going to because I feel very disrespected by this audience. So I'm going to leave. And I was leaving, and this guy came up to me, and he's like, please, please, before you leave, can I talk to you? And I said, you know, of course. And he said, you know, I really came tonight really very much on Israel's side. And I'm leaving changed. And I see things from a completely different perspective now. And I just want to thank you for that. And I said, well, I thank you for coming and being willing to give up what you thought was the truth and just not clinging to those ideas as like cornerstones of your identity and saying like, I'm willing to have my notions challenged.
Hmm. Has there been an opposite reaction?
Yes. I've also received emails saying like, you know, I think Rachel was naive and she didn't know what she was doing. I think that this is irresponsible of you to do this play. It's a piece of propaganda. And that's, you know, if you look up the play online, you're going to see a lot of that. So I've had those responses too. And I usually don't respond or respond respectfully and say I appreciate your perspective and thank you so much and keep doing what I'm doing.
So you've mentioned the Florida reaction. Where else in the country has some sort of strong reaction or emotion been brought to the fore after your performance? Because during your talkbacks,
yeah, there was one particular performance. I was in Charlotte, North Carolina, which is actually where Rachel's parents were when she died. Really strong community of Palestinians there were so welcoming. Yeah, it's just really wonderful to even think about them. And after I finished the show, there's a moment in the play where, as Rachel, I'm talking about helping a young boy with his English homework. And this man comes up to me at the end of the play and he says, you know that part when you're talking about helping the little boy with his English? And I said, yeah. And he said, I'm that little boy. And that was a big moment. That was a moment. And other moments such as meeting Rachel's parents or meeting people. I think I met her roommate once and I've met her cousin, and meeting these people who remind me that this is a true story, that this actually happened, that this isn't something that's like, you know, it's easy as an actor to have to distance yourself from, you know, I can't know as an actor that I die at the end of the play. So yeah, just those experiences where people who, and that young man had actually met Rachel and had known her. I believe his family had hosted her in their home in Gaza at some point. So yeah, those moments were really pivotal.
You said that you revisit Rachel Corey's own words almost after every performance. Mm-hmm. Now, has the show therefore evolved, and who has kind of helped steer the production with you?
Yeah. So the show has evolved a lot. I would say I've become just even more, the language has just become deeper for me, and I still find things that I'm like, whoa, that's what that line means? I would have never thought that like 2 or 3 years ago. And then you come back to it and having more life experience, things look different to you. Someone who's really helped me remount this production and give the language new life is my teacher at American Conservatory Theater, Lisa Porter, and my good friend Adriana Mitchell. Both of them have been just like so present in the room. And, you know, when you're rehearsing a one-person show, your scene partner isn't there until the audience is there. So just having these really incredible women to act off of in the moment and to also like take notes and help me shape and be specific as an actor has just been invaluable.
It's Ashley Malloy performing My Name is Rachel Corey. Ashley will be performing that at ACT's Costume Shop Theater August 17th to the 19th here on Market Street. So has any of Rachel Corey's family seen the show?
Yes, actually. So back in September of 2013, I had actually emailed Rachel's mother, Cindy Corey, in June, asking, you know, would you like to come to the show? Just like on a whim. And I didn't hear anything back until about maybe 2 days before I opened. And she said, we're coming. Craig and I, Rachel's father, are coming to the show. And I just about fell out of my chair.
Maybe you didn't want to know that beforehand.
I was terrified. But they came to the third performance, and it was actually a really incredible experience. I was in a pretty tiny room, and the room was standing room only, and they were sitting in the front row, and I was about as close to them as I am to you right now. And there was a moment where I deliver a monologue, obviously as Rachel, to her father. And I was looking at Craig Corey, her father, and doing this monologue, and he looked away from me at first, and I just kept looking at him. And then eventually he looked back at me, and we locked eyes, and I did the monologue, and that was one of those moments you just don't get again.
Mm-hmm.
We were both crying, and It was just really special.
Must have been difficult for you as well.
It was difficult, but, you know, I just tried to be really present with him and not worry, am I doing a good job? Am I serving her memory? But to just be in the moment with this man who lost his daughter.
Mm. Well, thank you for sharing this, and I encourage people to catch My Name is Rachel Corey, starring Ashley Molloy, 17th through the 19th of this month at ACT's Theater Costume Shop Theater. Thanks so much for coming in, Ashley. Wish you a terrific run and continued success with telling this very important story.
Thank you. Take care.
I should also give a shout out to our own Dory Stein, who, as part of his Tangents program on Saturday evenings, does a Gaza Corner, an update on Gaza, in his final hour from 11 to midnight. But do catch My Name is Rachel Corey, Ashley Molloy, at ACT's Costume Shop Theater if you can. Heavy subject of Gaza and Rachel Corey, we go to a little bit of a lighter subject to conclude Open Air this week, the 5th annual Vaizhi Comedy Fest, presented by the Times Group of India, the biggest South Asian comedy festival in the United States. For 11 days in 9 Northern California cities, it's co-produced by Bay Area-based Indian-born comedians Samson Kolhatkar and Abhay Nadkarni. The latter of those two joins me now in studio. Abhay is a comedian, writer, producer who moved from South India to South Central L.A. for grad school. Apparently dodging bullets en route to school, it armed him with plenty of stories and stand-up comedy as a good catharsis for combating culture shock. He's appeared on CBS, on Audible's America from Abroad, and has been featured in the Huffington Post, the Chronicle here in San Francisco, and has been a part of major comedy festivals throughout the country. He's also the co-creator of The Setup, a weekly comedy show featured as one of the best underground comedy shows in San Francisco. Welcome, Abe.
Hey, glad to be here. Yeah.
Yeah, so fifth annual. What's new in this year's festival?
Well, it's the fifth, so we weren't expecting to make it to five when we started, and that's been pretty cool. We have a lot of newer comedians that have traveled from New York. The cross country. We have Akash Singh, who's a very funny guy. He's, you know, touring all across the country. We have Aiko Tanaka. She's a Japanese comedian that's featuring in the festival. We've got Subha Agarwal. She's a writer on the Jim Jefferies show. And we have some favorites that are coming back, like Ahmed Barucha, Alingar Mitra. Very funny guys that did the fest last year, and they had a great time, so they're coming back. Yeah.
Well, one of the changes from this year is that you're not having folks come from abroad, apparently.
Oh, yeah. There's a there's a reason for that. There's a lot of legal aspects, and, you know, it's just it's a little tricky nowadays with a lot of people traveling back and forth, so we want to keep logistics as simple as possible.
Yeah. But still having quite a wealth of comedians to be a part of the festival. Now, some 30 comedians are lined up. Are they seeking you out, or vice versa? Are you looking for them?
Yeah, it's a bit of both, actually. So we reach out to comedians that we've worked with before, and then sometimes they reach out to their friends and they're like, hey, you should do this festival. These guys produce really good shows. So, you know, they reach out to us. So we have a submission process on the website. People submit, and we get some really good acts from there. And then there's a lot of people that we know that are part of the network of comedians here in San Francisco, LA, New York, Dallas, Chicago, a lot of different places.
Speaking of which, one of those gentlemen from Los Angeles is Ahmed Barucha, who you mentioned. And nothing is sacred in this comedy show, not even cows.
No,
so
never.
Let's hear a little bit from Ahmed, then we'll talk more with Ahmed.
Cows. We kill them, we eat them, we wear them. That's on par with most animals. But with cows, we also eat veal, which are their children. Then we drink their milk. It doesn't sound as bad, but it's the milk intended for their children we ate. We eat their babies, and then we eat their babies' food. With cookies. Just dunking cookies in there. Just a midnight snack. But then, on top of all of that, we take pictures of our missing children. Put it on their milk. Hey, sorry for killing your kid. Haven't seen my kid, though, have you? Real worried about my kid. Your kid's dead, ate him, washed him down with his own food. Keep a lookout for my kid.
One of the many comedians appearing as part of the Daisy Comedy Fest. That's Ahmed Barucha from L.A. He's going to be appearing tonight at Cobb's Comedy Club here in San Francisco. Talking with Abe Nadkarni, who is a comedian in his own right and is the co-producer of this year's festival, the fifth annual festival.
Yeah, the fifth annual festival. You know, there's Emma's a really funny guy, and in fact, his background was very interesting. He's from an Irish Catholic Pakistani household, so that's like a pretty good mix of people from different cultures. You'll never see that in other, you know, places. It's a very interesting mix.
And people say the melting pot is obsolete. I don't think
yeah,
so.
Exactly. It's like a potpourri of comedians.
So any new venues this year?
Yeah, we're actually going to San Mateo, one of the venues in San Mateo. That's our first time doing a show in the peninsula. And we have a show at the India Community Center in Milpitas. So that's another new venue that we sought out. And we're also doing a show in Dublin at the Dublin Performing Center of Arts. Yep.
Not with the Irish guy, though.
Not with the Irish guy. No, there could be some surprises.
Should be a connection, yeah.
Yeah.
So the festival schedule includes San Mateo, Berkeley, Mill Valley, Santa Cruz, Milpitas. You mentioned Dublin, and of course here in San Francisco.
Yeah.
The festival runs through the 19th. It must be a challenge finding the right combination of comedians to put in any given show. How does that process
Absolutely.
Work?
We just, you know, I think there's a lot of people that are from different age groups and they have different experiences. So that helps, like, curate the lineups. And then people that are traveling from different cities, they have a different view, point of view. So we take that into consideration. And then we also look at, you know, the content of the jokes and how it flows with the rest of the show. So there's a lot of curation that happens. That's part of the show as well. Like, in the back, we're always like, hey, if we have Usama Siddiqui, who is, you know, part of last year's festival, he's a Bangladeshi-American comedian. He's coming all the way from New York. And, you know, it was funny when he did the fest last year. We were like, hey, we should put an Indian, Pakistani, and a Bangladeshi all in one row. That could be funny. So we have these inside jokes too, you know.
As much as the comedy comes to a fore, one again in this time, this particular period of our country right now, it must have some kind of resonance in terms of what are we doing? How can we help this situation? Obviously, laughter is helpful, but there's got to be a subtext of what is going on.
Yeah, it's become almost ridiculous, though. Like, well, the things that you see on the news these days, it's like you can't even make fun of it anymore because, you know, fun used to be in, you know, being some. When you say that something is funny, it's usually an exaggeration of the truth. But the truth itself has become so exaggerated that you can't really poke fun at it anymore. So a lot of comedians nowadays, they're talking about their own personal lives, and, you know, politics is one aspect of it, but I feel like a lot of comics have, like, changed their subject matter to talk about their own personal struggles of living in the time that we live in right now, you know?
And including some fascinating observations about American culture, including this Alangan Mitra's observations on football.
People say figure skating is the gayest sport, but I think it's football. Think about it. You have these, like, muscular men in tights trying to get on top of one dude and this other group that's like, no, stop, he's ours. You do something wrong, a man trots out and throws out a colored flag, blows a whistle. Holding. That's the gayest penalty. No, Tom, you can't hold on to him. You gotta let him go. He's chasing after another man. He's going for the sack. Gay marriage, it's a hot topic. It's very hot. It's flaming. People are saying gay marriage is going to tear the moral fabric of America. That cuts deep, because the design of the fabric of America is being used to oppress these people who are the designers of the fabric of America.
Great observations from comedian that will be appearing at the Aragon Theater in San Mateo on the 10th of August, tomorrow, and at the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley on the 12th. That's Alangan Mitra.
Yeah.
Fantastic lineup. And you can hear a lot of these clips and get a feeling for the amazing lineup that you have, Abe, at DESICOMEDYFEST.com.
Yep.
I say DESI because it's spelled that way, DESICOMEDYFEST.com.
Yeah, exactly, DESICOMEDYFEST.com. The shows are going to happen from August 9th to the 19th. 11 shows on all consecutive nights all across the Bay, San Francisco, the South Bay, East Bay, and the North Bay. So check out our website. And there's a lot of information there, and hope you can see you all at the shows. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Abe Nadkarni, thanks so much for telling us more
about it. Yeah, it's great.
Laughter is the best medicine. Check out DESICOMEDYFEST.com. That's DESICOMEDYFEST.com for the lineup. You'll also see some great video clips, a couple of which you just heard on this program. So check it out. You'll really enjoy the DESI Comedy Fest this year, the fifth annual one. That's Open Air for this week. I'm David LaTulipe. Thanks so much for listening. Our shows are archived at kalw.org. It's there. You can also learn more about the program and perhaps make a suggestion for a future segment of Open Air. My email address is david@kalw.org. My thanks, as always, to Neil Swinkles for producing the show. Next week, taking a week off, Renee Kemp will be sitting in once again as guest host. Do tune in to Open Air next week if you can. Thanks so much for listening.